Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel for this Monday. It is the 12th of May, and it is great to have you all
and
with us. Hopefully, you
had the 12th of May.
Yes, it's the 12th of May, and hopefully everyone had a lovely Mother's Day, and everyone had a great weekend, and to the moms on the panel.
Thank you. That would be
odd. Belated happy Mother's Day.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, dear.
Excellent.
And Lynn, too.
And Lynn, too. And well, happy Mother's Day to everyone. Belatedly so. And welcome back, Rosemary. Good to have you here. Rosemary Armeo is University of Albany journalism professor and investigative reporter. Political consultant Libby Post is with us, and WAMC's Alan Chartok joins us as well. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Hello. Good morning.
All right. So let's get what? Were you going to say so?
Yo.
Oh, okay.
Yo.
Let's get to the news and talk about all the stuff that we have to talk about. We welcome your comments as always. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And it's a busy news day. We've got a lot to talk about.
But it is, Joe, and I don't want to hijack this, but Libby has this incredible article in front of her that I saw in the Times this morning. It's astounding.
Earlene Hooper. I closed it, but it was in the Daily News. Earlene Hooper, who's the assemblywoman from Long Island, she took Barbara Penn, place, has quite the temper. And they were in the mock session with the interns, and one of the interns did something she didn't like, and she went
ballistic on the intern in the mock legislature.
Right, and Wayne Jackson came in.
Wayne Jackson is
the sergeant at arms, one the most nicest man on the planet.
I love him.
He's great, and showed her the door. And she's the deputy speaker, and she makes everybody talk to her, address her as Madam Deputy Speaker.
In other words, if I'm coming up to her and say, Madam Deputy Speaker, can I talk to you?
That's right. So it was quite the little hoopla. But, of course, you know, it was the Daily News and the Post and making all the big deal about it.
So there probably won't be anything nothing will come of that other than
other than an embarrassment to somebody who I think doesn't get embarrassed.
I was going to make that exact point. You can never be embarrassed if you can't be embarrassed.
Right. I think, you know.
To know enough to be embarrassed.
It's amazing to me, as someone who used to be down there when I worked, when I was your student and I was, an intern and a fellow, the women who didn't know how to deal with power and didn't really understand power when they get power treat other people horribly.
Yeah.
I keep seeing it over and over and over again. And there are plenty of women who don't, and those are the women who understand power and understand sharing power is how you get power, and, you know, it's not about the titles, it's about getting the job done. But some of these folks, and men do it too. I mean, there are men who abuse their power horribly, and we see it every day.
Every day they get arrested.
That's right. Every day they get arrested. Every day they kidnap 200 girls from a school.
Well, that's different. You know? That's not the New York State legislature.
No, that's not the New York State legislature. But, you know, it's just the power thing really gets the people. And we just don't. And I don't think women are taught really how to use it and how to
what
use
did
it
the intern do?
Some parliamentary thing. He was going to do an end run, around.
He was trying to get a bill brought to the floor.
Right. Yeah.
Maybe by a discharge petition or something. Right. Who knows?
She's gone crazy over it.
Yeah.
I just don't care.
Isn't the key word here mock?
Yes.
Well, it is.
In a number of different ways.
Yes.
And the whole idea is that the kids get a chance to do it themselves.
Right.
So she's standing there because one of her students is there, and she wants to show support, and she starts yelling.
Yeah, and she goes after the other person.
Being a helicopter teacher,
assemblywoman,
whatever that phrase would be.
Yeah, yeah. I once had one thing that happened, and why should I bore you, but I will. I had a student who I placed in an office who is a Hispanic student, and the senator kicked the student out. As soon as she saw him, she kicked the student out because he wasn't African-American. And that made the front page of the most despicable newspaper in the world.
The New York Post.
And I had to go on then national television and debate her over the issue. They brought me down. Remember when WOR Joe was a superstation.
Right.
Yeah, and it was wild.
Oh, sure it was.
It was really something.
Yeah. Well, when I was there, I worked for somebody who I very much respected, but who had quite the temper.
Yeah.
And reduced me to tears once or twice.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if this is a training issue. There are just some people who need, I don't know, medicine, counseling, something separate than, it was like after Abu Ghraib and everyone was saying, oh, we needed training for their low-level employees who had perpetrated the torture. I didn't have to go to school to know that torture is probably not a good thing.
I hate to say it, but I agree with you.
Yeah.
Need to be taken down a notch.
Yeah, that's another great expression, isn't it? Yeah.
Our parents use it's taken down a notch. All right, let's talk about some other – are we ready to move on?
Oh, sure.
Excellent. Okay. The vote in Ukraine, separatists in two provinces of eastern Ukraine conducted chaotic and sometimes violent plebiscites on Sunday that offered voters just one question about self-rule while raising many more about where events in the world were headed. And indeed, those questions remain. So vote on self-rule leaves many questions and such chaos amongst the votes. Rosemary, I'll go to you first because you weren't here last week and we talked a lot about the elections and a lot about this sort of, just doing it on your own after it's called off. So what do you make of this?
I was in Latvia, as a matter of fact, talking with a lot of young journalists from seven of the former Soviet provinces who are all watching this. Really, I can tell you a lot more closely than we are. May 9th was a huge celebration in the Russian-speaking world. It's the victory. It's like our D-Day, victory in World War II. And the imagery was just incredible wherever we went. Huge protests, people with big red flags saying victory in both Latvian and in Russian. And the Russian-controlled TV was filled with World War II images. Very important because what's going on there now is they're casting the Ukraine in terms of World War II. We are the Russians fighting the fascists all over again.
Yeah.
And the reaction of people to the election and to what's going on is so measured. It's fearful. They don't want to end up back where they were in the Soviet sphere. They don't want to annoy, to touch off Russia by being too bold and criticizing. And yet they're not real happy about what's going on.
So I have a question for you. There was a poll, which we mentioned last week, which showed a majority by far of the Ukrainians did not want Russia.
Correct.
But they have this special election in the area where the poll shows this result, and they win. The Russians win overwhelmingly.
I think the numbers are just really cooked. We're now seeing reports about what really happened in Crimea, where we got the same thing. The voter turnout was much lower, and even among that low turnout, there was not an 87 or whatever it was, 84 something percent approval rating. But people are afraid. They go and do what they're supposed to do. They go along to get along, and I think that's what you're seeing. Sure. I think the election is completely without merit of any sort, pro or con. There's nothing to be read in that whatsoever.
Except that Putin, who we've been talking about day after day here, turns out to be an evil genius, but a genius nevertheless, because he announces before the election, he's against the election.
Right.
He's against the election, and B, he's moving his troops away from the border. And today he's saying through a guy,
we have to pay attention to what the people say.
Yeah, no, we're going to stand behind what the people say.
I think he is very smart and is playing this. I don't think he planned all this. I have never thought that. I've said that repeatedly. I think he saw an opportunity and took it, had great success, and now why should he not follow up on it? But I don't think there's any plan for him, like, okay, first we move into Ukraine, then we're going to move into Latvia, then we're going to move in. I don't think that's happening.
Well, no,
do you remember when John Kerry said he was asked a question, what would get us out of Syria when we're on a path to start bombing or something in Syria? And he goes, well, they could, turn in all their weapons. And the next thing you know, we're on a plan. We're negotiating and actually getting those. I think that's what happened with Putin, that he saw what was happening in the Crimea as a result of the throwing out the president, and he went along with it, and he is riding high on that.
Well, it's possible you're right, It's also possible you're wrong. You know what I mean? I mean, it may be that he
and
did have it all worked
really
out.
He really is pulling all the strings. Oh, yeah. He is as Machiavellian as we're giving him credit for.
Well, you can be Machiavellian and not plan it all out. I don't think he has the money to pull this off. And long term, he is really forcing the West to take a look at, for one thing, how they're going to fund energy. And he does not want that. If they come up with alternative ways to get energy, if they're going to fight him about how much they pay, that does not help him. His economy is not in good shape. It's very dependent on oil and gas and nothing else.
But he also
it's a very temporary advantage.
He ratcheted up the gas prices at the end of last week.
Correct.
What did he do that for?
I think the sanctions actually are having some influence. I think that it's not unreasonable to think that he can still be brought back in. I've objected to how we've treated him in the past, as if it were still the Cold War, rather than treating him as an equal, as someone who could be controlled and manipulated. And he's reacted against that. But that's what's really needed in all of these places. You have to have the East and the West working together. So
we're going to take a break. We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. And we'll be right back after this short break.
Support comes from William Pitt Sotheby's International Realty, a real estate firm serving the Berkshire region with local representatives and global connections. WilliamPitt.com for listings. East Haven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs, massage for couples and individuals. EastHaven.com for information. And Homebrew Emporium in North Greenbush, West Boylston, South Weymouth, and Cambridge, offering beer, wine, and cheese-making equipment and supplies, tea, herbs, and more.
Welcome back to the roundtable. Welcome back to our panel. Alan Chartok, Libby Post, and Rosemary Armeo, we welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. This is a topic that we spoke of a little bit last week, but we didn't talk a lot about Nigeria. And I want to get to this. I want to get to this issue and obviously have everyone weigh in on the Nigeria schoolgirl abductions. Many questions, of course, still going. Where are the girls? Who are they? Why did this group, Boko Haram, abduct the girls? The group also, why was Nigeria so slow to do anything about it? And why did Nigeria change its mind on foreign assistance? So many questions that are still out there regarding this and this tragedy, and the question of course, another, you know, will the girls ever be found is the other question. There was a BBC report that there's been a sighting, and it is a very, very troubling news, obviously. And when you have a story like this, I don't know where you sort of
get in this
try. Well, yeah, where you begin of trying to find
what was the troubling news?
Reason.
What was the troubling news about the sighting? I hadn't heard that.
No, the troubling news about the abduction.
French television is showing a footage of 100 girls in full hijab chanting, and Boko Haram said, "Okay, well, we might bring them back, but they're all converted to Islam and they're saints."
And I have a bridge I'd like to sell you.
Yeah.
This is getting to what I was talking about before in terms of power. I mean, you know, these girls have absolutely are seen as total chattel and total property, and they can be done with whatever they want. And these guys,
you just said so. And the leader
said so. And the leader said so, and they can do whatever they want and sell them into slavery because they're just girls after all. And, you know, this the radical Islamists, I'm not, you know, their fear of women having any sense of education or any sense of who they are and advancement is just astounding. And we see it over and over again. And this is one of those situations where these girls are damaged for life in a very real way. And who knows what has happened to them already? We have no idea. And this is one of those situations. And I think that Nigeria was slow to the table because I don't think they really cared. Because, well, it's just a bunch of
You have no idea how fast this is compared to something extremely similar that had happened for years in Uganda. For 30 years, it was a Christian army, not Islamic at all. The Lord's Resistance Army abducted boys and girls. Boys are being abducted in Nigeria, too. Turned the boys into soldiers and the women into sex slaves. And nothing happened. The West did not pay attention.
Huh?
Yes. So it is not a religious thing. This is a terrorist thing. And Boko Haram operates in Nigeria because it has more money, should have more money than anyone knows what to do with it. It's so rich in oil, and yet 50% of the population has nothing, zero. And this extremist group has risen up. It began becoming very violent and doing the kidnappings and stuff since 2010. That's like 4 years this has been going on. And I think the Nigerian government did not respond for the same reason the Ugandan didn't, because they don't know what to do. They don't really care about women. You're right. These are not people in the elite. So it was easy to just let them go. I think it's what's made an interesting difference here is social media.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Where suddenly we're all sending tweets and
right.
signing petitions, and
Bring
Michelle Obama
girls,
is talking
right.
about it, and
right.
David
Hashtag.
Cameron is on TV,
right.
and suddenly the pressure is on. That's what brought about
But even that is a month later.
Government.
I mean, April 15th is the day they were
yeah.
seized.
Well, it takes
well,
a while.
Well, I mean,
yeah.
I agree. I
mean,
I know you can't get into the timing of it, but
a month.
But
yeah,
still.
I keep hearing that. Why is there no outrage? I think there's a lot of outrage, but no one knew what, and maybe we still don't know exactly what to do. Apparently, the most interesting thing I heard was that Israel is sending intelligence mm-hmm. agencies in there. For my daughter, I'd be happy to hear Mossad's on the case. They'll take care of it. We don't really know. What do you do when you have these secret armies running around?
Well, I do think that the big problem for the government is if they accept American help, if they accept the intelligence that is being offered. I have a feeling, by the way, it's a double, triple fake out. I think what's happening is they're getting the help, but they have to deny it. Because you can imagine mm-hmm. what the other guys say. Well, this is why this government is nothing more than, you know, a piece of American, hegemony.
Yeah. I also want to add one other thing is that, you know, I'm a big feminist, and I believe women are treated terribly in many places in the world, including our own country sometimes. But this is more than just going after girls. The name of Boko Haram, although there's some dispute about what it actually means, one interpretation of is Western education is a sin. These were girls who were taken because they
Make
were in school.
Sure.
This is just like Pakistan. Mm-hmm. And that is a big, you know, you don't have to be a feminist in order to be upset by what's happened here.
You still can't drive a car if you're a woman in Saudi Arabia.
That's right.
And I wonder from the West's response and folks thinking that the West has been a little slow to pick up this story, you know, when we have child abductions here in the United States, the white kids get the play, and it takes a lot longer for the kids of color, the minority kids, for them to raise up in the media. And I kind of see a parallel here to if this was a bunch of white schoolgirls, I think we would have seen military action immediately. And since it's African kids, black girls, you know, there wasn't that rise up in the West. As there would have been if they were white.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and I think there's a lot of different things going on. You know, there's a lot of what you said is true. There's a lot of parallels that we can make. And the bottom line is that these girls are seen as chattel.
Yeah.
Women are seen as chattel. They're seen as commodity. And we can do with them as we want. And they have no say in their future.
Well, Libby, when you see the pictures of the grieving parents, of mm-hmm. the mother,
oh,
and the rest
yeah.
of it, that to some degree has to...
I'm talking about the people who took these girls.
Oh, the people who took the girls, right.
People who took the girls.
But also there's the question about the people in power, why they didn't do more faster.
Because I think that they think the same kind of way and that it's not as important. They didn't come from upper class, if there is upper class, Nigerian families, rich families. If they had come from rich families, I think there would have been a different response.
We're just about out of time, but the government says it's taking discreet action as it does not want to do anything that could lead the abductors to kill the girls. That's a valid point, correct?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of what action they could take that would lead to that action.
Nixon had a plan.
I think that's just something you say when you really are not doing very much, because they're under the total control of this group. What could the government say or do that would force them to kill the girls?
We welcome your comments. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Roundtable at WAMC.org. We'll read your letters and get to many other stories after this news break.
Support comes from the Office of Dr. Vivian Letizia, Woodstock, Orthodontic, Cosmetic, and General Dentistry, featuring laser and digital technologies, WoodstockDentist.com. Capital Power, Albany, New York, dealer and installer of Kohler Standby Generator Systems, CapitalStandbyPower.com. And Oakwood Friends School, Poughkeepsie, New York, an independent college preparatory boarding and day school for grades 6 through 12. Focusing on the individual learner, OakwoodFriends.org.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Dave Mattingly. Ukraine's president is describing the independence referendum in eastern Ukraine as a farce and illegal. European Union foreign ministers are using much the same language. In fact, the EU is adding the names of 13 people and two Crimean companies to its sanctions list a day after the voting. But as Jessica Gallagher reports, pro-Russian separatists in eastern Ukraine are hailing the results.
Pro-Moscow demonstrators here in Donetsk are declaring victory in a referendum to secede from Ukraine. It's unclear if the declaration of self-rule means the Luhansk and Donetsk regions will stay independent or possibly join Russia. Donetsk Elections Commissioner Roman Lyagin says 89% voted in favor of seceding from Ukraine. A representative from the Luhansk region says more than 94% of residents voted in favor of the referendum as well. Russian President Vladimir Putin earlier urged pro-Russian separatists to delay the vote, saying it could create dialogue with Kiev. The Kremlin now says it hopes the practical implementation of the referendum results will take place in a civilized way and without violence. For NPR News, I'm Jessica Gallagher in Donetsk.
They're cleaning up today from weekend tornadoes in parts of Nebraska and Missouri. In Sutton, Nebraska, about 80 miles southwest of Lincoln, a tornado blew the roof off City Hall. Authorities say nearly every building in a two-block section of downtown was damaged in some way. In Oreck, Missouri, authorities say up to 300 homes were damaged by a tornado there. Aaron Odell is the superintendent of Oreck Public Schools, where classes are canceled today and tomorrow at the local high school.
There are portions of the roof on the gym completely gone. You can stand in the gym and see sky.
The National Weather Service says tornadoes were also reported yesterday in Iowa, Kansas, and Indiana. Disagreements over the Keystone XL pipeline will likely stall an energy bill in the Senate today. NPR's Louise Schiavone reports procedural maneuvers have the pipeline in limbo.
The Senate is expected to fail to stop a filibuster of a bipartisan energy efficiency bill. The legislation has strong support on both sides of the aisle, but a dispute over whether or not the bill can be amended has Republicans threatening to withhold their support on a vote to move forward on the measure. Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid is using Senate rules to block any and all additions to the bill, including an anticipated proposal to approve construction of the proposed Keystone XL pipeline from Canada to the U.S. The GOP also wants to use the overarching bill to prevent the EPA from adding new greenhouse gas regulations on coal-burning power plants. Louise Schiavone, NPR News, Washington.
Federal safety regulators are investigating some Nissan Quest minivans because of faulty gas gauges. This is NPR News from Washington. A new survey finds a sharp drop in the amount of time teenagers in the U.S. are reading for fun. NPR's Jennifer Ludden reports researchers are asking if the drop in reading time is linked to the explosion of digital devices.
Jim Steyer of Common Sense Media says there's been a steady decline in reading for fun over the past decade and more, and a decline as children get older.
For example, 45% of 17-year-olds today say that they read for pleasure no more than 1 to 2 times a year, if that often.
That's up from a third of 17-year-olds a decade ago. The studies do not say why, but Steyer says most teens now have access to the growing array of tablets and smartphones and are spending more time on them. Researchers say the technology is changing so fast, though, it's hard to track exactly what teens are doing online, reading or not. Jennifer Ludden, NPR News, Washington.
People are lining up today to get back into the Washington Monument. NPR's Allison Keyes says it's reopening for the first time since an earthquake did some damage nearly 3 years ago.
Among the people in line this morning were Brian Polhamis and Hazel Castro. She's from Costa Rica. He is a Peace Corps volunteer. They just got back from Costa Rica, and she is very, very excited to get a chance to go up to the top of the monument. She's never been up there. He says he was up there when he was a little kid, but he doesn't remember it. So he's looking forward to looking down on the White House.
That's NPR's Allison Keyes in Washington. More than 150 cracks in the monument had to be repaired after the 5.8 earthquake struck in August of 2011, centered in Virginia. I'm Dave Mattingly, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from American Jewish World Service, working in developing countries to end poverty and advance human rights at ajws.org.
Support comes from Albany Marriott. With 359 guest rooms, special event and meeting space with internet access, the Market Restaurant and Martini Lounge, and airport transportation. Facebook, Twitter, or albanymarriott.com. Fleet Feet Sports, Colony and Malta, New York. Locally owned specialty run shops featuring footwear, apparel, and training programs for all distances, all abilities. FleetFeetAlbany.com. And the Clearwater Festival, June 21st and 22nd at Croton Point Park in Westchester County. Special musical tributes honoring Pete and Toshi Seeger featuring Josh Ritter, The Mavericks, Richard Thompson, and many more. ClearwaterFestival.org.
You got to hear the news. We basically did a rehearsal.
Yeah.
That's kind of what we were doing. Good morning.
Testing our opinions.
And welcome back to
–
that's right. Welcome back to our roundtable panel. We welcome your letters, roundtable at WAMC.org. And we got a few, didn't we, Alan?
We did. Cheryl says, hi, I spoke to a woman from Africa recently. She brought up the point of who is funding this group. Where do they get their money? Thank you. Cheryl. Okay, that's one. And then we also
heard... It's a good question about the money, though.
Yeah, well, it's always... I mean, yeah. You got to follow the money. And then Matt writes, Libby has opened my eyes. Radical Islamists have a fear of women. This idea gives so much clarity...
So do Christians.
What?
So do Christians. Have you ever been to a Catholic church?
Well...
Lots of religions have fear of women and the power of their spirituality.
Isn't everything relative? I mean, do Christians want to take away women's right to vote?
Some do. Sorry, that's not Islam. That's some of these. That's some of the cultures that have Islam.
Well, I'm sorry too, Rosemary. I love
it's
you.
Not, this is really unfair. This is really what? Ignorant. It's not.
What's ignorant?
Islam is not anti-woman. There are many people
who
are
Muslim. No, we're talking
about Muslim.
Radical Islamists. Look, radical Islamists, ultra-Orthodox Jews. Radical Christian writers, they all see women as second-class citizens.
But isn't there a difference in how how far they're willing to go in that obnoxious behavior?
Yes. Some. Well, you know, it's there was some guy, I think, running in down in Texas for something. I can't remember what it was, but he was a radical Christian right person and said that women shouldn't have the right to vote.
Right.
You know, so, I mean,
the IRA kidnapped a mother of 10 and killed her and hid her body.
Yes.
There's not a whole lot of pro-women. We love strong women, I think, except for maybe Amazonia. There's no history of this anywhere.
But I'm sorry, Rosemary. I know that, you know, I don't want to offend you in any way, but I do think that there is a big difference between what Boko Haram is doing and what people do in other cultures, which is discriminatory towards women. I'm telling you, it's a proportionate issue. That's what I'm telling you.
Well, finish reading the letter.
Well, I'm so sorry. Libby has opened my eyes. Radical Islamists have... I'm not really sorry. Libby has opened my eyes. Radical Islamists have a fear of women. This idea gives so much clarity to so many situations across the world. It is obvious I can't believe more people don't discuss it in those terms. That's why you're here, right? That's what I have. Do you have anything else?
Nope.
Oh, no, yeah.
Oh, well,
no,
there's one.
No, then there's a Walker who said, calling Putin brilliant seems a little over the top. Think about it. How smart do you have to be to impress stupid people?
Oh, gosh.
Being uninformed is stupid.
I'll say he's brilliant. He has kept together an incredibly complex country. He is a major player on a world stage, even though his country is almost bankrupt. He is brilliant. He's not good. This is like saying Adolf Hitler was stupid. He wasn't stupid. He was evil.
Yeah, and they still put Hitler on the front page of Time magazine.
That's right.
Because they knew what.
That's
what,
right.
How important he was in terms of the world.
Right.
And I hate to say this, Rosemary, but I agree with you.
Well, that's been rare today. So
yeah.
Good.
Well, you started it.
Na-na-na-na.
We welcome your letters. Roundtable at WAMC.org. Over.
Hey, children.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Over seven rounds of the National Football League draft, teams chose more than 200 players from surefire stars to kickers and all but anonymous players from tiny Division II programs. One player was repeatedly passed over was Michael Sam, a consensus All-American at Missouri and the Associated Press's Defensive Player of the Year in the Southeastern Conference, considered college football's most competitive conference. Sam was also the first publicly gay player waiting to be drafted. Finally, after nearly 7 hours of picks on Saturday, the third and final day of the draft, Mike Kensel, the NFL's vice president for game operations, walked to the lectern and read Sam's name. Cheers erupted among the several hundred fans left at Radio City Music Hall in Manhattan, the site of the draft. Sam, a defensive end, was the 249th player selected. Only seven players followed. Then the draft was over. Sam's draft status was seen as a barometer of whether the NFL was ready to accept an openly gay player, particularly because the National Basketball Association broke that barrier in February when Jason Collins joined the Nets. And then there's been some talk as to, again, why he was picked so low in the draft, and also a lot of it had to do with the NFL Combine in February, where his numbers were low and his stock was seemed to have gone down considerably because of some negative numbers that he had in that. Jeff Fisher, the coach of the Rams, said, "We're in an age of diversity. Players understand that. They know that." And also, Jeff Fisher said he is a self-described student of NFL history and said he is very happy to be a part of that history. It should be noted that he will be playing for the St. Louis Rams if he gets through training camp and is selected and makes a spot on the team, and which is not far from the market that he played in as a
I thought he was a hotter player than his placement indicated. I thought he was like a hot prospect.
Well, I think he was. I think there's a number of factors here. First, in the combine, where sort of like boot camp kind of thing for this, he didn't score that well, but individually he scored better. And I think, look, I think that this was bound to happen. I think he might have ended up being the last one, but he was going to get drafted because there's pressure within the sports world to be more open and to be more accepting. You know, if he had been the number one draft pick, I think you would have seen this outrage. Wow, they're just doing that because he's gay. You know, mm-hmm. It would have been nicer if he was somewhere in the middle. But the fact of the matter, he has been drafted. He is out. I watched his little video last night that was on the Times site. He's proud of who he is.
What little video?
Well, they had a video of him coming out.
Announcing
the fact that he was gay.
Not when he was drafted.
No. And he was, he's proud of who he is. His parents are proud of who he is. His coaches are proud of who he is. His team rallied around him.
And his boyfriend, too.
Right.
Let's talk about the kids.
Let me finish. His team rallied around him when he came out on the college level.
Can I just interrupt?
I think you'll see the same thing.
I just got yelled at for interrupting.
But no, what she was talking about, about the team rallying around, I thought his timing in all of this was fairly brilliant. Because he came out to the team in his senior year while they were playing. Right. And as a locker room, they already dealt with everything. He didn't come out to the public till the end of the season. Right. But he came out to the team and the coach and everybody else well before. To say, hey, look, we already dealt with this.
Right.
Like, this isn't going to be, there aren't any question marks. We already dealt with it.
And his parents seem to have already known. I mean, you know, it's hard. It's hard. I mean, I came out to my parents in 1978, and it was hard to do. And it's hard. It's a hard thing. And this is a macho sport where, you know, towel snapping is de rigueur, and it's a hard thing to do. And he's in a place now where he, you know, if he does well, it'll be great. If he doesn't do well, it'll be, we told you so. And that's what we have to avoid.
And of course, there has to be getting a place on the team. But, and you certainly get the idea that if he doesn't make the team, the reason that he doesn't make the team is because of talent and not because of the sexuality. We do want to mention, I thought the coverage of it was very interesting. We were waiting, and a lot of people expected sixth or seventh round that probably, as you indicated, that there would be a lot of, there was a lot of pressure on teams, some team to the NFL did not want to go through saying, well, we didn't draft this player who, as Rosemary mentioned, had very high numbers and good stock, at least going into the combine. And then when it happened, ESPN showed the video of him receiving the phone call. He broke down in tears, and then he kissed his boyfriend, and that was the headline, which I just thought was really weird. It's like, okay,
but
really,
it's
that's
sensational.
Great. Yeah,
it's yellow journalism. That's what it is. It's sensational. So they put the thing that's going to make people, that's going to give people the reason to have the most incredible responses, either bad or good. And we already saw a Miami Dolphin who's in Twitter trouble. Okay, Don Jones, he did a controversial tweet. He said, ugh, and horrible. And he's been fined, and he's not kicked off the team, but
Maybe it wasn't planned. Maybe it was, you know, that he's going to act his life normally, and that involves, you know, kissing someone he loves when he gets really good news, and the media shows it, and we're all adjusting to it, and we yell at somebody who acts rudely about it. That's not a bad thing.
That it's not a bad thing that...
None of it's bad that he kissed his boyfriend, the media showed it, and one guy reacted badly, or maybe others, and they were rebuked.
No, I think the fact that it made the headline. The headline is what bothered me. Like, that was the – instead of this guy has broken a barrier.
Right. Did they
show – That should have been the headline instead of drafted player kissing his
boyfriend. Who used the headline?
ESPN.
Because ESPN did.
I mean, do they show every straight guy kissing his girlfriend when he gets
– They show a fair number of those. Come on.
Well, no, I'm not – look, I'm not arguing about him showing it. That's fine.
Just
I have no problem
it the
making it the headline.
The headline.
Making it
right.
Okay.
I don't know. I would have been tempted to if I was there. That is the headline. It isn't just some like, okay, here's a guy who got in at a low level. It's like first gay, openly gay player got
but
in.
But kissing his boyfriend is not the headline. The fact that he's got in and he was drafted is the headline. The fact that he's openly gay is the headline.
No, that's sort of the advocacy position. The headline is like, this is a guy who can kiss his boyfriend in public and play football. Make it a headline. I would have done it.
Because it's unusual.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think it's sensationalized.
No other player ever drafted in the history of the draft kissed a boyfriend.
Dog bites man, no go.
Okay, yes, what's wrong with the headline that says first gay player drafted in NFL, and then you show the picture?
Yeah.
What's wrong with that?
Okay, but it isn't the headline. Journalism should take the most unusual and interesting aspect.
And latest.
And newest. Yeah. You're right. So on every measure of newsworthiness, it's the kiss.
Oh, come on.
A kiss is just a kiss.
I was going to say the same thing, Rosemary.
Really? A kiss is just a kiss,
Oh,
Libby?
I disagree. All right.
Wait. Just so we get it all straight, you disagree because of...
I disagree with... I think it's sensationalizing it, and I don't
well,
think...
Well, of course it is.
I think it's... But it's...
It's like showing drag queens as the only image of gay pride. You know,
what is it? This is a young, proud man who has made a big achievement.
I get it. But he did it.
But I don't understand
no
it being...
It.
I don't understand your position. I'm sorry. But,
It's news.
Kissing somebody is not news.
Yes, it is.
No, it's not.
It's not. Okay, Libby, you can just yell at me. But the kiss, he didn't...
You're talking about my life, Rosemary.
Okay. No, I'm not. I'm talking about this football player.
No, but you're talking about the life
of
gay people.
He's been out for a year,
right.
And he kissed his boyfriend. Where's
once
the news
again,
in that?
The news is, once again, he is a pick to the draft. He did something no one else ever
then
picked
make
to
that
the draft did. No.
What,
that no one else
boyfriend.
Ever did. He celebrated with the same-sex partner. That's what makes him news. He wouldn't even be in the headlines at all if he were just picked in that round. He would not even be a headline. He is a headline because he's openly gay. And he shows that with the kiss. It's a demonstration of his very point. I think that ESPN furthered his agenda by showing the kiss. How's that?
I disagree.
Me too.
Okay, let's take something non-controversial like transgender.
No, how about Marco Rubio
military.
Being ready for the president?
Oh, isn't that that's really ridiculous too? Yes. Okay.
All right. Well, I just all
let's
that,
do Marco
all,
Rubio.
All that arguing just right. Got me kicked out of the system here. Okay, here we go. Actually, let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll figure out where
Alan's
we're going.
Sitting
next.
In a corner grinning at
I
us.
Know he's sort
scary.
Of enjoying this.
He
yes.
likes the cat fight.
Yeah. I was sure somebody was going to turn around and say, what do you think, Alan?
We'll take a break. We'll find out what Alan thinks after this.
Right. Support comes from Mannix Marketing, Glens Falls, New York. Since 1996, a web design and internet marketing firm working to help businesses get found on the internet. MannixMarketing.com. Sundog Cider at Solaqua. Locally produced hard cider from New York Hudson Valley apples. Unfiltered, naturally gluten-free, handcrafted at a revitalized solar-powered mill in Chatham, New York. SundogCider.com. And Charles Padula DDS Union Avenue Schenectady, providing bonded composites and air abrasion cavity removal, which helps to eliminate needles and drills. PaduladDDS.com.
Marco Rubio making headlines over the weekend. The 2016 presidential primaries are less than 2 years away in the prime season for thinking about running and couching your thoughts in the vaguest language possible is nigh, according to the Washington Post. However, Republicans seemed a bit more open about their future ambitions on this week's menu of Sunday shows, especially Republican Senator Marco Rubio. The Florida senator was already stirring up 2016 gossip with his presence in New Hampshire this weekend, his first visit to the early primary state in 2 years, and he said that he is ready to be president. He said he's ready.
We're laughing at the very idea.
I'll be 43 this month, but the other thing that perhaps people don't realize, I've served now in public office for the better part of 14 years. So Marco Rubio says that he is ready, willing, and able to be president of the United States, and we should, so we note that on the Sunday show. shows, also making news, Marco Rubio then on the same show saying, I don't believe humans are causing climate change.
Right. Well, now that's the one that really caught my attention. First of all, Marco Rubio obviously offers something to the Republicans who have a tremendous deficit when it comes to Hispanic voters, except that he's Cuban. And sort of right-wing Cuban. And that didn't stop Obama from winning big in his election, including the areas that Marco Rubio comes from. But on the climate change, it's extraordinary. That is an extraordinary statement. I don't believe. Okay, you don't believe. I don't believe in science. Okay, you don't believe in science. I believe if you do this, the only thing that's going to hurt is the economy, and that's the way that it is. Now, okay, what if you're wrong, Mr. Rubio? You know, what if you're wrong? What if, in fact, science is right, you're wrong, you put your head in the sand, and it's and what's happening is this world just burns up. I mean, what, or goes underwater. What if you're wrong? If you go the other way, you can't be wrong. You might cause some economic distress, you might. But I'm not so sure that's true either, because a whole bunch of new industries will break out as a result of that.
I know. You look back in history and you have men like Henry Clay and Hubert Humphrey and Adlai Stevenson who ran and lost for president, men who had experience and accomplishments, Mr. Rubio, for years and years and years, and we picked someone better. And now maybe this is a Barack Obama problem. What was he, a senator for 15 minutes before he declared himself ready to win? I think he's just like grossly unqualified, and the fact that he comes from a certain demographic that the Republicans need somehow qualifies him. He's accomplished nothing.
He's
including even immigration reform. Right. What did he do on that? Terrible, terrible candidate.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get in a lockbox update, or a lockbox update, and we will do that after this short break.
This is Pat Bradley in WAMC's North Country Bureau. To hear us in the Champlain Valley of New York or Vermont, tune in to 91.9 Plattsburgh or 103.9 Ticonderoga. In the Adirondacks, listen on 88.7 Lake Placid. There are myriad issues and stories, including our economy, agriculture, tourism, that we cover across the Adirondacks, the North Country, Vermont, and even southern Quebec. Catch it all on the air, our digital platforms, and at WAMC.org.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable. Time to check in and find out how our lockbox challenge is going. As you may know, our lockbox is ready to accept donations, and we have an incredible challenge on the
$25,000.
$25,000, and
Mr. Big.
That's right. So we're here to
not Chris North, but Mr. Big.
Well, we can't deny it.
I can't deny it.
Confirm or deny.
Right. No.
Okay. So Megan Finnegan comes in and checks in and tells us how we are doing as of right now.
Well, right when I came in, we had 155,501, but I think someone made a contribution just as I was walking through the door.
But we could make it today if everybody's listening right now and is part of our community, just did it.
Yep.
And as I said before, I don't want to walk down the street, have somebody come up to me and say, you know, why aren't your fund drives shorter? And I'll say to them, did you put anything into the lockbox?
So it's 155,501. That we have, and we need to get to 325 to give the check.
That's right.
Right, so, and I'm prepared today to do math. We have 169,499 to go, and we have 21
bottles
days
of beer
to
on the wall.
Yep,
right, and 21 days. So 21 we need to raise how much?
$8,000 a day.
$8,000 a day. Good.
Wow.
Well, that's a lot of money.
A lot of money.
But also, there's the law of increasing water going down the spigot.
Momentum.
You know, water going down the spigot.
Water going down the spigot. Never
heard
that
one. Yeah,
well, it's the law when you fill up the thing, and then you take out the stopper, and then you see this tiny little thing.
By the end, the little tornado.
It's
the little tornado. And it's sometimes called a flush.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay, so 8,000 a day. That's great.
Yep.
We can do it.
You can call in. You can go online.
And if we don't do it, we lose $25,000. And that's the risk. And, boy, I don't want that to happen.
We need you. WAMC.org, WAMC.org. Go to the lockbox. You can also call the 800 number, 800-323-9262. Go to extension 145 and help us out, and we'll have another update
tomorrow. Don't fool around.
Megan, thank you very, very much.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Appreciate it. All right. Again, WAMC.org for the lockbox. Alan, we have 1 minute. Letters.
Oh, yeah, letters. So from Andy. Rosemary Rocks, Andy. Okay.
Thank you, Andy.
Then Jane says, Roundtable, I cannot find the site for sending an email to Roundtable, but I did hear about kidnapping via BBC, which we listened to via WMC overnight. It was WMC this morning when it happened, but for some reason it took a while for others to actually hear this terrible news. Thank you for the Roundtable 9 to 10. Jane said it, longtime listener and member.
All right. And...
I just wanted to give a little footnote to what I said before about some Texas guy who said women shouldn't be allowed to vote. It's actually Greg Abbott, who's the Texas Republican governor for a candidate for governor, who said women have smaller brains.
And oh, God, not than him.
Well,
smaller brains than he has.
Well, yeah, it's a size thing, you know.
Not
size matters. Not
and that's how we'll end it this morning. Back tomorrow.